transmitter, a borrowed antenna, a temporary coax, a laptop feeding audio, and they ran for 4 days.
That's something you inform.
You have to apply for, yeah.
Not that
borrow equipment if necessary to get on the air.
Is this simultaneous application? Not that I'm ever going to do this.
No, you get on the air to meet the deadline. You file your 319 for station license. Run it for a few days, or the attorneys say you should run it for a couple of weeks. And then if you absolutely have to, take it off the air, file a silent special temporary authority.
Don't you need to document that you've been on for a couple of weeks? Because we lost that one permit we had because we couldn't document that we did this.
You should document. Take pictures. If the ones that the FCC's really gotten snippy on is where a temporary tower was put up, and an inspector came out and looked for the tower, and there was no tower. And then they got really snippy about that. So if possible, at least have the tower structure or whatever you would put it on still be there when the inspector comes around. But these are last-minute things. But just please don't lose the station because you're down to the wire. Frankly, the one in Puerto Rico was almost lost because it was down to the wire, and we helped pull it out of the fire. Actually, several stations in the last 3 years.
If you're going for the year and a half extension,
yes.
How long does that take? I mean, when would you need to apply for it?
They strongly recommend you apply for it weeks ahead of time before you need it. Actually, I think I've been told by one attorney 2 months ahead, okay. But I don't know if there's a specific time. I'd say weeks ahead, but they want to know if they're going to give you that extension. They want to know that you're making progress. Mm-hmm. And you need to document it. It can't be that you just slept on it and you haven't raised enough money so you haven't even started. Yeah. Get started before that 18 months. Get equipment on order. Get people organized and document all this. And then they'll grant your extension.
When we did a full power about 20 years ago, we had 18 months. And our reason was we had everything going, as you were saying, we were moving apart. And they found asbestos in our site.
Oh.
And they thought that was a good enough reason. And we didn't use the whole extension. We got the extension in a month. We were on the air. We had to redo all the plan and the air and again.
Yeah, any kind of natural disaster or unusual weather is a good excuse too. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And these construction permits are transferable to another party that has the same or greater number of points. So if your group can't do it, find another group that can.
Say again?
Yeah.
We were told that's not possible.
Oh, okay.
No.
Correct
no,
me.
No, no, no.
Correct
CPs
me.
CPs are not.
Correct me. Okay.
No. CPs. Sorry, there. CPs.
Only
are
the
not
licenses.
Findable.
Only the licenses. Okay.
Only licenses is, and only if after you're licensed for 3 years. On LPFM.
Okay.
Yes.
Thanks for correcting me on that. You're right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. This doesn't apply there. Full power.
Full power okay. Translators. Yeah, you can assign the CPs, but not the LPFM role.
All right.
But you can change your board members, though, right?
Up to 50%.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it.
Okay.
That's the entire
thing. Well, maybe you're up.
Did you have a question?
I did. This asbestos reason was a really good reason. What does the FCC qualify as a good reason for an LPFM?
Depends on what they had for dinner when they read your permit.
Yeah. Yeah.
We used to be telling people that the extensions were routine, but now we're hearing they want a good reason and they want documentation.
There's people
regular, ongoing
putting that AM
if you change boards every year or something, But usually where they get anal about that is if you do more than a 50% change of board prior to your grant. And we've already seen a few applications get dismissed for that. That's considered a major change.
Okay. Between applying and getting it.
Right.
Okay, we do that.
And if you lose one of them involuntarily, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, that they could, they'll probably work out a little better on that. You know. All right. You have my
life cycle. I'm sorry.
I think we're doing, what are we doing? We're doing life cycle on paper?
Yeah. Life cycle? Okay. Can I ask a question on boards? Can we increase our board?
Yeah.
Depends on what's in your bylaws. Your bylaws say you can increase the board.
Is this the first one?
Yeah.
Okay, there we go.
You know, I know I call this the life cycle of an LPF station. I think it's because that's from my upbringing and product management, you know. And unfortunately, we've had way too many stations, including the one that does the whale songs, that has gone through the whole entire life cycle of LPFM, including the cancellation of the license.
Aww.
So don't let that term scare you, because we know that you're all going to keep these stations on the air. You're all going to get nice and funded. And hopefully there won't be a lot of other station activity that's going to take your fun away. So let's see what we got here. Next one up here. Okay. Some reasons why you may have to file for a change in construction. You know, you maybe have to file. Site insurance. You lose the ability to use the site. You've lost a lease. The site owner just said, you know, I don't like the programming. You know, you're too liberal for me. Get out. You know those types of things. So you might have to make a change. I talked about this a little earlier. Interference discovered during testing. You find out that you might have got a frequency that was available to you, but maybe it wasn't the best. And maybe you're getting some incoming interference from another station out of town. Encroachment, incoming interference, another station makes a change, upgrade. They move their station, and full power station moves closer to you. Suddenly they're more stronger. There's a proposal right now for the Class A stations to be able to upgrade to a new Class A C4. And we're getting ready to work that out at the FCC. And, that could also bring some new incoming interference if that happens. Outgoing interference, meaning that the full power moves closer to you, and now you're interfering with them because you're right in their contour. And that's, that is something where, you might have to do some quick, because remember, we're secondary, they're primary. if they move, if they say jump, we have to say how high. We have to get out of the way. Station improvements, you want to try to change, tweak the antenna. We talked about tweaking antenna heights. We talked about doing some various tweaks to try to get the most out of your 100 watts of ERP. We just talked about board members, anything like that. So these are the kinds of changes.
While you're on that, we're kind of in a situation where this might matter. I heard you say up to 50% of the board members.
Right.
We received, I don't know the answer, but the actual wording, it might have come from Prometheus, the description of it said that they're really not that concerned about high turnover. We haven't heard anything that says 50%.
They probably aren't. I've not seen any history. Petrie, any thoughts on that? Or
I talked with Peter Doyle, the guy at the FCC, about this several years ago, because I was very concerned because as a licensee, you have an obligation to notify the FCC when things become out of date on your application. So if you put something with one board, and then 5 years later, three of those people have left, that information is no longer accurate at the FCC about who is liable for the station. Now, and many, many low-power firms can have more than 50% of their board of directors change since they put their application in. And so this is something I was really stressed out about, being the law-abiding citizen that I am. And I brought it up with Peter Doyle, and I was like, there's a lot that haven't updated it, and so now if you change it, it looks like more than a 50% change from the board of directors that you had, even though it was only one person left this year, second person left the next year, people rotated off. And Peter Doyle was just like, huh? What?
Mm-hmm.
I never, no.
No, I don't know.
Please don't worry about it.
So, yeah, I mean, it's not something they're thinking about. It's something that if you have an opponent
right.
who wants to trip you up and bring up a legal issue, that might be fodder for them. But it's not something the FCC is like, I am looking around. I ate something bad salami for lunch, and now I've got to like go out and bust someone that's been changing their
mind. And that's the thing about the LPFM. LPFM does not have to file ownership reports
mm-hmm.
like commercial full power does.
Like ever? Like you don't have to file it ever?
No.
We do not do ownership reports in LPFM.
So what? I mean, but you are allowed to change your board over time.
Oh,
so
yeah.
How do you?
You amend your application.
You do if you file 318.
Yeah.
And to avoid problems, you should probably just do it as often as there
is. You know, if you change a board member, file a 318. Just, you know.
But you don't file a transfer of control.
If it's less than 50%.
If it's less than 50%.
If it's more than 50%.
If it's more than that, I don't know. I'm because of the whole issue with
the
3 years and all that with the LPFM, they kind of put us into a weird position with that, you know, 3 year restriction. I mean, I can understand why the 3 year restriction was there. You know, I think some of us were actually kind of negotiating for it. So, you know, but you know how that impacts. I've heard people say in the past that as long as you know the mission of the organization stays the same, the actual structure of the organization stays the same, that they will let you do over a 50% change in your board. I mean, let's say you have five members and your bylaws say that three members go off in odd numbered years and two of them go off in even numbered years. You know, I mean.
I should just add one thing about this, which is this is an incredible cautionary tale about deregulation. Because there actually used to be rules that were published about exactly these issues. Under Reagan, a lot of those rules got thrown out because every federal agency was commanded, get rid of rules that are stopping business from innovating. And so we want the code of federal regulations to go from this big to this big. And so lots of agencies threw out all these rules that they had that were well thought out, and then they didn't stop regulating. They just became processing policies rather than published rules. So now government has gone from like over-regulated or whatever to more secretive. And like it's a processing policy in the desk of a bureaucrat rather than a rule that anyone can look up on you know in the code of federal
regulations. You're gonna find that there's gonna be a few things about LPFM that are not codified, and it's all policy, and it's all based on past precedents, and you know, and then you gotta have people like me or others that actually can go back and research that information. And
so just to get a summary on that, how much risk do you think there is if we're anticipating that we can't do it without a more than 50% change?
I don't think you're... let's just say this. During the application process, I'd be a little worried, but after a grant, I wouldn't be too worried, especially based on...
But our LPFM's filing applications for transfer from old board to new board once we cost the 50%?
I would not.
I've not seen any.
You wouldn't know?
Yeah, I would just say the same organization. It's just that they were negligent in filing the changes as they came.
We should check with the attorney.
That's what I'm saying. I asked Peter Doyle about it.
Oh,
he was like, huh? Like,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, this was 4 or 5 years ago.
I wonder if Tom Hudner really, or Peril would know
yeah.
a better source for that right now.
Yeah.
You had a question.
Yeah, because you said when you have the change to file a 318... Phenomenal confusion. File 318 with just, you know, a change that's less than 50%.
Yeah.
But whenever you have new board members come on, or
yeah, when you change,
so it could be
you know, when you change your board members, you just change that section of the parties to the application and update it with the correct.
Actually, it's supposed to be if anything on your original 318 is no longer current, you're supposed to file an amendment 318 to correct whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
A board, even if it's just a board member.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the next page here. Let's see what we got there. Let's see. Oh, okay, what can I change? You can change a channel. As a minor change, you can go to your first, second, or third adjacent, or you can go to what's called your intermediate frequencies, which are your 10.6 or 10.8 away. It's a weird thing in the FCC that spans all the services, but... So, you know, if you just want to make a change, you know, just as a minor change. Now, if you can make a showing that the new channel that you want to go to, that, you know, that you need to move off the channel, you need to move to another channel because of an interference issue of some kind. And, you know, I've been able to get these done pretty easily.
And this is before you even do equipment testing?
This is even before you do equipment testing.
Because the translators, they're no longer letting us do that. We actually, if it's a rule-compliant translator, then they can sign on and then file for the,
you know, we
for the
had,
displacement application.
Yeah, we had, I had one the other day that...
It's a change in policy.
That, you know, we did the channel change because we later found out that the channel that they chose was the input frequency of a translator.
Oh.
And the translator was on the same tower. So yeah, it would have wiped them out. And so the FCC let me have that one, you know, without any problems. And you know, they weren't even on the air. If anything, we avoided the interference by catching that. I mean, after the fact, but we
so
catched
back door to a major change.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
All right, let's see what's... okay, just things to remember that, you know, the new channel must meet all your 73807 minimum spacing, follow their full power, low power translators, channel 6's, foreign stations, you know, everything there. Second adjacent short spacing is permitted, but it will require a new second adjacent waiver because you're on a new channel, you're having to deal with new second adjacent neighbors in most cases. The FCC will not allow any short spacing on a new co or first adjacent channel, even in cases of displacement.
Yeah.
That is a federal statute. That's in the Local Community Radio Act that basically locked our 73807 distance spacing numbers into law. And of course, always seek the services of a qualified consultant or engineer for any channel changes. Do not rely solely on any of the search tools, including my LPFM, my tool. Make sure that you do some double and triple checking because sometimes the tools aren't always right. And so you can change your location. You can move up to 5.6 kilometers away. There are some exceptions. If you are in a timeshare agreement with somebody else, you can move to a common location without any concern about, you know, even if it's more than 5.6 away. So let's say you decide you want to move to somebody up here, like in Glendale or something, and you know you're up here in the Hollywood Hills somewhere. You can move there and be at the same transmitter site as long as you're already a timeshare. Actually, the FCC wants you to do that. They want you to co-locate. That way, they don't have to manage all these different transmitters, and it's actually better for the listeners too to have. Try to get as many common locations as possible. There's also a rule that came around with the LCRA. If you're on a third adjacent channel, if you're third adjacent short spaced to a third adjacent station, now keep in mind that you are allowed to third adjacent short space now, but it's based on the numbers. if it was like before the window, it's the same numbers as second adjacent. You can move within 500 meters of that third adjacent station, so like on the same tower, on the same hill, and then without any regards to the 5.6. Multiple hops are not allowed, meaning you can't file a 318 to go to North Hollywood and then immediately go to Van Nuys. You know, especially during the application process. Now, we've had people try to do that, and you know, we've also had people trying to just trying to move too far out. There was a huge, we had a huge case with a translator that tried. They have different rules, but they still have a maximum distance that they could go as a minor. And he was going boop 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 boop, and what he was doing was he was taking a trailer out on alongside the highway, setting up this trailer with this temporary tower, putting it on the air for like a few hours, and then covering the license, and then filing again. The guy consent agreement, they did a consent decree, he lost all his translators. He got out of the business. take a look here. Let's see. Location change and a channel change can be done on the same application. Like with channel changes, the new location must meet the 807 distance spacing requirements. However, if you're already short-spaced to another station because they moved after you filed, you can still stay short-spaced as long as your new location is further away from them. So if you're, you know, so that's what we got there. And of course, if your new location is second adjacent short-spaced, then you'll have to do a new waiver. All right, let's see what we got here. Inward interference and encroachment. When you start broadcasting, you realize that you know that there's already a fairly strong station in all or part of your service area, or encroachment. You know, application activity by a full power FM station or even a translator results in your station receiving new interference in all or part of your service area. Encroachment activity by full power stations can lead to displacement, and in some cases, where, you know, if the LPFM is, interferes with the full power station. So, you know, if a full power station moves into your town and you're already on the air, it's up to you to find a new place to go. Mm-hmm. And that's when you really need to get the help of somebody like Mike or myself or anybody who does this kind of stuff. All right.
Would that be a whole new application process?
It would be a 318. It would just be a 318. It would be considered a minor change because it's going to be you're going to be doing a reduced interference showing. So pretty much what we got here. This is the one thing I explained earlier today about the contours. This is actually a real world case that I did. On the left there, that was the current situation that they were in. They were getting interference from KJKK in Dallas. That's Jack FM, and they play what they want. And this is their 40. This every station has both interference contours and service contours. And the interference contour, basically, the bottom line is that in order for an LPFM station to not receive any interference, this interference contour must not, cannot overlap a service contour of the LPFM station. You'll notice that the service contours for the LPFM stations are a lot smaller than the interference contours. In this case, this is the 40 dB interference contour that is used for co-channel. This station was currently on their current channel. They were well within that contour. They were at 45.5 is where we measured them at. So we found an alternate channel on another frequency where there was another station here, this KTTY, which I think is in, I forgot where it is, but it's in a different part of Texas. But notice that this is a 40 dB contour, and notice the service contour right here. You'll see that there's an area here that is outside the service contour altogether. This area would be predicted under the FCC's archaic rules of receiving interference-free service, where this site will still get some interference, but still, that's half of your population there now getting interference-free service, where this side, you were getting the whole entire contour was getting interference. So in this case, we were able to make a showing that said like 10,000 people or so are now outside the contour. This is a better channel for the LPFM. It's within the public interest to grant this waiver or grant this change, and they did. This was one that they actually did. This has been granted. And the station is on the air now on this channel. So let's see what else we've got here. Okay. Other minor changes that you need to do, like change the timeshare agreements. So we talk about transfer control. Maybe filed after the LPFM has been fully licensed for 3 years. I think we talked a little earlier about going silent. Did we talk about going silent in here yet? Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is just repeating. What's already been talked about. Let's see, I don't know if there's anything else here. Let's see what we got.
silence is expected to last at least 10 days.
Yeah, basically, you know, if the silent period is if the silent period is going to last at least 10 days, you need to notify the FCC. Let them know that you're going silent. If it's going to last for more than it's going to be longer, then you want
if it's 30 days or longer.
Yeah, then you'll want to put in a you'll want to put in an STA, a special temporary authority, and that's done through the same filing system that you do your 318s. You know, by Communications Act, any station that has not broadcast for the past 365 days will have their license automatically canceled. So in other words, get on the air and do something, run it for a day or two, document it. So, and, you know, so that way, you know, they know, you know, that way they know that you've been on the air. You know, get on the air, and then if you have to go out again, then go out again. But, you know, try to avoid that.
There actually was a strategy, a lot of them, to get on the air at least once every 30 days for a day. So they never had to file by SBA. I don't know if that's... You can't do that forever.
No, you can't. And then you also run afoul of that minimum operating schedule rule.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would strongly suggest against doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
You're just, you know, you're just wasting spectrum if you do that. Mm-hmm. So, engineering STAs, I don't know if we've talked about any of this. You know, if you lose some equipment or something and you have to run at a reduced power or run at some kind of a variance, you know, that you file a special temporary authority. This is one I've seen some. If you change your location, you can change your location temporarily, but the problem is that they may reduce your power because they're not going to put you in a location where it will extend your service contour past what you currently are authorized for. We saw that happen in Scottsdale with KWSS quite a few years ago, and one of the locations, they were knocked down to 1 watt because of the contour. It's good for 6 months, but can be extended for any good reason. And, of course, that's REC, that's my phone number, and I think that's it for that one.
Thank you.
What's the range that a full power station can claim as its legitimate range?
Well, there's, and that's in, I think that's 73809, I think that's in. There's like three different possibilities that they can claim. They can claim their 70 dBs, what's called a city grade contour. They can claim in their city of license. And I know there's one for the 60 also. There's three of them in there in 809. But I usually say it's a city grade contour or the, you know, that's usually the big one right there that they is 70 dB city grade.
I'm not sure how that would translate to our situation, but we have a station in Milwaukee on the same frequency that encroaches on the eastern side of Madison.
Mm-hmm.
So our station is.
But okay, the thing is your service contour, you know, where this comes into being is this: if your interference contour crosses into their service contour, that's the thing. If it crosses into their 70 dB city grade contour,
there's a whiteboard. There's a white
chart.
There
it is.
How about
that? And there's pens. Oh boy. All right. Yeah, there's several markers here.
Just while she's setting up, it's important to remember that this is all based on some fictions about, because, you know, with real radios, there are no brick walls.
Mm-hmm.
And so you might have this predicted contour, but it's based on, like, lots of statistics. And, you know, sometimes people are surprised, like, oh, I thought I was going to have a 3.5 mile range and people can hear me 15 miles away. That's probably because there's no one else on the channel, you know, or because of the receiver or all that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, but the power fans don't have, we don't have a zone that we're really entitled to with regard to full power stations. Except when the full power stations are outside of their contour, outside of their, for the most outside
contour.
So we can't really complain about interference from them in any case.
I'm wondering if a station in Milwaukee can really claim Madison that many miles away as part of their contour.
Now, the only thing you could say is if you have some real reason to believe that somehow they were cheating, which lots of people do, full power stations do. You know, they're supposed to have 50,000 watts and they really have 60,000, or wrong antenna or something like that, and you could bust them for it, you know, that under that circumstance, you know. But if it's just that their signal is going further than they're really supposed to be reaching out, you know, there's not a lot.
Yeah, pretty much, you know, every station, you know, your LPFM station is going to have a service contour. It's 5.6 kilometers out. Now, keep in mind that this example is based on that the world is flat. There's no mountains. Everybody is at 0 meters height above average terrain.
Oh, of course.
Yes. If this was anywhere else, you know, this could vary. And if you go to recnet.net and pull up your station there, you'll see what your actual service contour looks like. And then every station has an interference contour. Pretty much, this is the area where you're protected. I mean, protected to the point of where you're expected to have full, good, quality service. Where the interference contour is. It's very possible that somebody out here could hear your station. And that's what the FCC uses as the qualifier for whether your station causes interference. Now, let's say there's a full power station.
What's the radius of that one?
It's about 18 kilometers, I think. Somewhere around there. Might be a little less than that. 17, 18. I'd have to pull it up and look.
It's about right.
Yeah. Now, let's say you've got a full power station up here, and that full power station moves there, and let's say that there. Now, full power stations have these contours. Now, this 40 dB is used for co-channel. There's a 54 that is used for first adjacent, and then a 100 that's used for second and third adjacent. That's actually a very small area. The higher the number, the smaller the area. So you've got this full power station up here, and you know they just moved here, and they've got this big city grade contour that comes through here. That is their, let's say that's their 70 dBU contour. Well, guess what? Your station is predicted now to interfere with the full power station because you crossed into their because. Now you're a piece of you is in their contour, and they've got population in there, and they can say, well, you know, the LPFM station is now, you know, interfering with 32,000 possible listeners or whatever that's in this little area, and they could come after you. I'm going to just tell you, just you know, look at the rules. Look at, I think it's 73809. I think is where this is all at.
Yeah.
And
so is this the instance he was talking about where they made the trade-off?
I don't think I was in the room for that.
Well, you said that we have to take this really seriously if this happens because you made the trade-off.
It's actually a different. That's actual interference experienced by a listener.
Yes.
It's all about predictions.
Okay.
Of models of interference.
Mm-hmm. And trust me, I feel that this method that the FCC uses was created in the 1940s. Mm-hmm. It's archaic. Mm-hmm. All right. Any other questions? Once, more twice. Okay, who's next?
You and Michael.
Oh, it's a settlement. Settlement agreement. Okay.
We thought we were going to be doing this.
Hey, Betty.
Yeah. Well, the thing is I mean, how many in here? How many in here are still MX?
Okay. What, Michi? We've had a request from Pablito that he should go next.
Oh.
Because
it'll give you once a chance to rest.
Life cycle issues really well. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Go for it.
Can you do this? Yeah.
I guess I'm going to make sure of your presentation.
I don't know how that could happen.
I don't know. I've only lived with radio engineers my dad.
So if you're following your application at the FCC, you might be looking at this page a lot. Right down here, I just typed in ZoomX and the percent keys in each screen. And you type that in, and you go here, and it says, oh, your application is currently open, status is received. That's good to know. And then you might go into the information here. And you're at ZoomX, you've probably done this a million times, and you're going to look at your public notice file, your correspondence folder. Is there anything in there? I don't know if there's anything. And you want to stay on top of this. Because if you get a petition filed against you, you have 10 days to reply. Opposition. I mean, there's all kinds of timelines in here that are important. Furthermore, if you're in a NMX situation, you want to know what everybody else in your NMX group is doing, too. So, and we're trying to track this for a lot of people that we're working with, and we've developed some systems. This is not one, but we do lots of statistics. Meechi is really amazing at all of this. This is the ugly form of one of her tables. We keep track of all the intraday application status changes, letters and petitions as close to as when they're filed as we possibly can. This is what we're looking at, but this is still a huge amount of data. This is what an MX group looks like. This is Philadelphia. There's several MX groups because we need to keep track of that too. You know, you can go look and find out, oh, that's that applicant. So we're keeping track of this stuff all the time anyway. And it's hard for people, especially in the next groups, to keep track of it because they have to keep track of themselves and everybody else. So we decided, and we also need revenue sources because we're a small nonprofit, to create Prometheus Torchlight. And there are other services like this out there, but ours is aimed at making LPMM successful. That's really our niche. And it's an offshoot of having all this information and working with it all the time anyway. You sign up for this thing, and I'll show you the sign up page just because I'll show it to you. You know, we do charge $100 a year, and for anybody at this conference who goes and signs a piece of paper at our table, we will give it to you for free. And it enables you to track. Oh, that's not good.
Come on, that's worth this time.
There you go. So it enables you to track the status of any station, and we require you to put in your facility ID, which is some dumb number that the FCC assigns that you may or may not know, so you can look it up right here if you want. And what happens is every time there's a change in your application status or anybody in your MX group, or this doesn't have to be you, you can go track that, you know, religious broadcaster in your area too if you like. You get a piece of email. And so here you see, this is a very dramatic one that I got recently. Up here there were three changes to people who are in this MX group 34.
Oh gosh, yes, I know about this one.
And so here's the change, the petition to deny was recognized, three of them got a petition to deny. Down here, this is overwhelming because it's a big MX group. They're usually much simpler than this. So these are all the people who are in an MX group or were in an MX group, and who they currently are not short spaced to. You can also go to Peachy's nice table for this. To get in pretty colors and lay out better. But you get this within 10 minutes of some events and within hours of petitions and letters. And that includes letters that people mail in on paper. You know, they mail them in, FCC scans them in, and they enter some data in their system. And it's really a pain in the butt to keep track of all that. So right now, we're tracking application status changes like from received to accepted, which many of you in the MXs in the West, and I don't think there's anybody here, had happen recently. You know, things being granted are pretty exciting to know about. It's not all that urgent. And pretty soon, it's going to track. It's going to give you reminders about your CP expiration, your renewal stuff,
pointers to the resources we're doing for renewal announcements. And what's more interesting, I think, is we're going to add encroachment, which Michi talked about. So you can go look at the encroachment reports. Michi does them. If you want to not look at them and just have it mailed to you, this will be a way to do that. We're also going to do signal fidelity calculations. So, you know, if you get 2 dB less interfering signal because of some change, we'll tell you about it. Don't know when that's going to be done, but that's coming. And it'll help you spot also opportunities in your jump channel. But that stuff's not in there yet. So you can be the early sign-uppers if you want. And free for GRC folks. You can track one. If you're somebody who works with many stations, talk to us. We'll do custom deals to track launch. Any questions?
So, just to clarify, even for folks like us that already have our CP, then this is useful.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously
it's,
renewal.
It's less useful, right? Renewal is a long way off.
Yeah.
You have your CP, you're probably pretty well aware of when it expires. So, for the, you know, so we get the encroachment features and some quality features, it's going to be less interesting. Mm-hmm. But, you know,
theoretically, you might get more interesting.
You can see your license to cover, get granted, get whatever.
When do you anticipate the encroachment features?
That partly depends on how people are adapting to this or how they're coming. Because we'd like to fund itself as yet, because of rate. But I'm guessing within the next 6 months. We have a table right on the other side of those new orders. And by the time I get out there again, there will be a yellow path.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sure.
From a satisfied customer, we signed up for this a while ago when they first started it. We had a group of three and an MX. So for a couple of months, nothing was happening. And I was wondering, I wonder if this works. Should I stop looking? Should I stop checking myself, all the FCC announcements and stuff? But we had one of our groups file a dismissal letter. It was about 14 days. Finally, I get an email from Torchbearer, and check my email, and it was 5 minutes old when I got it. And I went and checked the FCC database, and like that message came to us within 2 minutes of the time that the FCC accepted that dismissal letter. So. Thumbs up, 2 thumbs up.
Yeah.
It's good service.
And you can collect all this data yourself.
I had to pay $100 for that.
You know, I can tell you, yeah, this is a good thing. I mean, I've got some applications right now that's collecting data in the background.
Yep.
You know, I don't, the way it works, we don't provide a triggering service like the Prometheus Torchlight is, but, you know, and I can tell you, the competitors, Vsoft, some of the other ones, they charge you per hit, per every time that they spot something. They charge you. And it's not cheap.
Yeah. One is $25 every single time.
Exactly. It's not cheap. It's not cheap. This is a good deal. Even a gooder deal if you get it for free. But I would definitely, you know, I would definitely suggest that everyone, you know, get in spotting service, so that way, you know, you can keep a watch on it. You know, of course, I'm tweeting every single new construction permit grant that happens. You can go to LPFMS and Twitter. We've got that there, and also too, we're updating the broadcast query tool in real time now. So if a status change happens, you'll see it. It'll update in real time. We check about every 10 minutes also. So, and I do get a daily report of the informal objections and the petitions to deny, but right now I have that set up right now only for the first MX settlement window right now. And if you go to recnet.home.recnet.com/window1, that is, you know, that's a manual daily report that I put up there of the current status of everything that's going on right now with the 78 MX groups in the West.
So track it somehow.
Yeah. There's a lot of info out there, you just got to know where to find it.
Thanks.
Okay, so let's now move on to let's save settlements for the last, because not everyone in the room is interested in that. So it just now makes sense to leave that last. Let's go to my LPFM coverage and support. Oh, I forgot. I'm supposed to let you do what? Okay.
And we have call letters.
Yeah. Thank you, Darwin. That's okay. Let's do call letters.
Want to do call letters?
Yes, please.
Yeah.
Okay. That's fine.
Yeah.
Guess whose brain's getting tired?
Anybody in here in a radio jingles? Radio ID jingles?
Mm-hmm.
Anybody? Anybody familiar with a company called Jam Creative Productions? Yeah. Anybody heard the Jam song? It's a little promo that they did back in the 1980s. Well, there is a line in there that says, there's such a maze of W's and K's, and that's what we're going to talk about here. Choose some call letters. Each LPFM station will have a four-letter call sign beginning with an LP suffix on the end. No three-letter call signs, unfortunately. It would be nice if we could. The LP, as mentioned earlier, the LP must be spoken as part of your legal ID, so your KRKD LP Los Angeles, not just KRKD Los Angeles. Call letters are assigned based on your location. K calls west of the Mississippi, in Alaska, Hawaii. W's east of the Mississippi, although I have seen the FCC let a few of them go. I've seen a W in Texas for an LPFW.
Recently?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
We got the intern on the call letter.
Yeah. And especially Minneapolis, because you know you've got WCCO and then you've got all the K call letters on the other side, and it's like, yeah. So let's see, a call sign. Now here's the interesting thing is, what if your call sign that you really want is being used by a full power station somewhere? Well, as long as it's not being used currently with the LP suffix, which other than LPFM would be for low power TV, you can try contacting the station. In some cases, good luck, especially if you're dealing with like CBS or Clear Channel. But if you can get their permission, get it in writing. Cover your rear end, get it in writing. If you can get permission from that station, then you could use the call letters with the LP suffix.
We contacted one in Kansas that turned out to be a Clear Channel part, but they would have let us use it. But then the contract they sent ran all the stipulations, and if they didn't like the t-shirts or anything we said on the air, they could just turn them away at the time. So we played it.
Yeah.
That was amazing that they put.
And sometimes they don't want to use, they don't want to give away a good call. Like we had one for Detroit. Detroit wanted to use WNEW, which was at one time for a long time was in New York. It was 102.7 in New York. And CBS owned the station, and they moved the calls down to Boston, they don't go to Baltimore. And they wanted to use it in Detroit, but Detroit's a major market. I mean, first of all, I think it's amazing that we got an LPFM in Detroit. I'm going to keep saying that. I'm going to keep saying that because we all had our doubts. But, the thing is that keeping in mind that even though Baltimore and Detroit are many miles away and they wouldn't be able to hear each other, that is a fantastic call sign. And CBS is not going to be too quick to give that away. They don't want to be in a situation where they can move that call sign to the Detroit market and market that as like the new 98.7 or something like that. So just make sure you got whatever you got it in writing.
Does that go the other way? If a full power station wants to use call letters out of an LP, they need our permission?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Absolutely.
If you had it first, yeah.
Yeah, if you have it first, if you're the first one in there.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah. Call signs used by ships or assigned to the Coast Guard may be available under special arrangements. You have to, if you go to the FCC tool, which we're going to show you here in just a moment, they'll usually display a phone number for you to call to try to get it released. I've heard hit or miss on those, getting those released.
I also have this little site that you can go to. It's recnet.net/calls. And if you go to the next page, you'll see what a typical thing looks like. There's all the available call letters that are not, these are call letters that are not in the CDBS database, meaning that there's a good chance, not always, but there's a good chance that these call letters may be available to you. The page, that calls page, has the whole entire thing from KA to KZ and from WA to WZ. So you've got all the possible call letters so you can, you know, do your little control F and, you know, do the searches and stuff like that. Call letters that are in red, those call letters are found in another FCC database called Universal Licensing System, or ULS. Those call signs are normally used for maritime, for ships. Sometimes you can get those released. When you go to the FCC tool, you can it'll give you a phone number to call if you want to try to get that call sign released to you. And as I said, not all call signs shown here are available. You still need to triple check in the system to make sure. If we go to the next page there, let's see what we got here. You know, as I said, double check. And you go to the FCC's call sign system, and this is just a screenshot of it. You can click the query button, and then it will take you to the next page that will be the where you can put in the call sign. You know, let's be WABC, you know, 777. And as we could see here, yep, that call sign is already being used as AM and digital television. So, I mean, you can contact Cumulus and ABC and see if they'll let you use it for your LPFM. You want to know the funny thing? We had, for a very short period of time, and I don't know if this was authorized or not, but we had in Texas, we had a KABC, which is 790 and Channel 7 in Los Angeles.
In LA, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I don't know if that was legit or not, but that was on, that they had that call sign for like about a year. It was for a school district, which, I mean, would be an awesome call sign. So let's take a call sign that is available. And you'll see, yep, green, it's available. So this means this call sign is available. You don't have to ask anyone permission to use it. And, oops.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. So, yes, call sign is available. So you can click on the initial permitting request. And then on the next screen, let's see. Okay, I don't have it. Let's go back again. Because I didn't go through the whole process because I didn't have a legitimate call sign and FRN to use to take it through this thing. I didn't really want to accidentally do anything. So on the next screen, it's going to ask you for your construction permit number. That is actually your, what's called your ARN, or your application reference number. It's the part of your full application number without the BNPL before it, so the 2013, you know, whatever that is. That, you just use that. Now keep in mind, this is if you are a new construction permit that you're just getting granted. This is not a case of a change in your call letters. And then that's how you do it. So I guess you go on to the next screen there, you know. Final thoughts. As soon as your construction permit is granted, you may obtain a call sign through the FCC system. You cannot broadcast without a call sign. Gotta have that. Now here's the other thing. This is what got me KRKD. The FCC does not always purge deleted call signs from the FCC call sign reservation system. Sometimes you'll see a call sign in there, and you'll see that it's in there with no name, no nothing, but it's showing it's not available. You might go into the REC tool and into the broadcast query. You might see that the call sign is deleted. It has a little D before it, so it's deleted. Call to the call sign desk. Got that released. We found out in the case of KRKD, the owner died, who owned the stations. He died. They didn't want it. They wanted to just get rid of the stations altogether, so they bought several commercial licenses. Gone. They couldn't get rid of them because they were in small towns. You'll need your FRN and password. That's that federal registration number, that 11-digit number that begins with 002. You'll need that to reserve your call sign. And there's the phone number for the call sign desk if you ever need any help from them. But most of the transactions you can do from the call sign tool.
And that FCC tool is very helpful there, and it's very much up to date. And you got a question?
Yeah, I understand on the station announcements you have to include the LP. You have to do that on your logo, your website, and all that kind of stuff.
No, you do whatever you want on there.
Okay, just on the announcements.
You do whatever you want. I would myself. I mean, I know some of the creatives have already done for KRKD, even though I don't have the CP yet. I have not put the LP on there. But, you know, I think really I think it's always good to put it on there, even if it's like in little small letters, just to distinguish that you are a low power station, that you are a product of the Local Community Radio Act, and, you know, and that this is, that little LP means that we give a damn about our town.
Yes.
Woo. Yeah. So, yeah, that's what LP, if anybody asks you, what does LP stand for? It stands for we give a damn about our town. And that's it on call signs. If anybody has any questions, going once, going twice.
Great.
Good.
Paul
doing Prometheus monitoring service, give Michi's voice a chance to rest with.
But we are negotiating with manufacturers and distributors to do bulk purchasing for folks so that we can, you know, economies of scale, get a bunch of orders in and get some discounts so that, you know, everyone can get on the air with a little less money out of the bank. And so we're offering, part of the idea here is not that we're trying to stay away from the becoming a retailer of any sort. So for folks that we're working with, we're offering the assessment, which you saw earlier, which Alan talked about a little bit, which has lots of information about the construction process. And so for folks who go through that process, we're putting together packages and specific items tailored to your specific needs after we talk to you. And those, you know, so that you could get all of those items, all your equipment needs into the bulk purchasing program. For other items, for folks who just need a transmitter or an EIS or an antenna, those are things that we're doing buys for anyone, those three things. So I think I'm just going to say that you should come talk to me or Pablito or Alan at the table outside if you're interested in those things. And the idea is to put together large buys. We're probably going to do it we're going to do one in August, and then we're going to either, depending on how well that goes, we'll either do it every month or every 2 months. Yeah. And just come on by, and I'd love to talk to you about it. So.
Did you say for people other than your assessment?
Mm-hmm.
People,
yeah.
Was it the three things, transmitter, EAS, and one other thing? What was it?
And antennas.
Antennas.
Yes.
When in August?
End of August.
End of August.
Yeah, yeah.
Any more questions? You can find him at the Prometheus table if you come up with a question. Okay, Michi, how about my LP of them?
Oh, back up again. How about that?
Okay.
I don't know if we're going to be able to do this with a visual. I don't know if we can plug in on this.
Sure. Yes. Can we get any screen?
I had a room full of inches.
Do you have HDMI?
Yeah, actually, I do.
Okay, it's pretty reliable. Just plug it in.
My LPFM and HD. Here we go.
Was
it?
We should just
usually does. What is that?
There it is. Anyway, I don't know if this tool looks familiar to any of you.
Yes.
This is my LPFM. This is my baby. You know, just a few tricks on here I want to show you. You know, there is, you know, there's functionality. You know, you can actually apply and get an account on here where you can actually put in a password and such. And you can save your LPFM facility. It only saves one. And what you can do is you can pull up this little screen right here. This is the My Status. And you can actually get a little, you can watch the progress of your application. This is something, this is a little feature that not too many people know about that's on here. And we also have another one on here that's kind of a precursor, you could say, to the encroachment functionality that that Prometheus is eventually going to do. In this case, we have a station here that is, LPFM service contour transmitter site is inside the station's interference counter, so the LPFM may receive interference. In this case, this is one of these cases where, you know, you might already get this off the bat where, you know, the full power station's interference contour is inside your service contour, so part of your area may get a little bit of interference. But, you know, I just wanted to show you that there are some tools in there. There's also another function in here if you want to do minor changes. We now support, you can go ahead and pull up the thing as soon as the internet decides it wants to work here. That's right, this is Ames. We're in MediaCom country, aren't we, here for the cable company? Yeah. That explains everything. All right, well, let's take a look at a station. Let's look at one of my favorite LPFM stations, KWSS in Scottsdale, Arizona. And we're going to look. Now, let's say this station wanted to make a move. You can bring it up in here, and as soon as the internet decides that it wants to play nice with us today, there we go. This is the channel. Disregard all this other stuff here. This was stuff that goes back to our old days with Nexus. Don't worry about it. I'm logged in as me. I'm on a privileged account here. So, but pretty much what you can do here is let's say because right now we're on 93.9. That's what it's saying. It's on the current channel 93.9. Let's say we want to make a move, and we want to try to stay on the same channel. You can click this button here. And then eventually here it's going to pop up this little map, and it's going to show here hopefully where you can move to. Actually, it's okay. There we go. That red circle there is where you can move as a minor move. The blue on the outside, those are other stations. So really, if this KWSS needed to move on this channel, they could move anywhere within that 5.6 kilometers. So that's basically what that's showing you. And then what you can do if you want to find a location, you can move the search. Let's say I want to move it to 7th Street Bell up in Phoenix.
That's more than 5.6.
The little blippers are right.
Oh, it's the end of the blip, okay.
Yeah, it's always, yeah.
It's not the cross.
It's not the, yeah, this is.
It's the point of the pin.
The point of the pin, yep. There it is. So there it is. It's available. So if you wanted to use that channel, you can. Actually, that took us out of the other mode. So
you do this for stations that have created a identity on your
Yeah, yeah. You have to create the identity. You have to go on to My LPFM, create a password, and then once you do, up here at the very top, there's this. Where is it here? Get out of the way. You can go to my account, and here you can put in the station here. Just delete that record. Let's go ahead and put another one in there. Let's do.
You have one that has a nearby station.
That's what I'm going to look for. And actually, what I'm going to do here is let's see here. Let's do this. Let's do that. Now,
let's see, you're North End Woodward, right?
Yes,
ma'am. Yeah, that's you. Okay, you know, the station that we thought was never going to happen, and it did.
Hey.
I told you, I'm just going to ram that down everybody's throat. I mean, you know, yeah. Okay, so here's, okay, I came up with the encroachment report. Now, keep in mind that these guys are on a waiver of the rules right now where it comes to Canada. And that's why that Canada is coming up in red. Because under the normal rules, yeah, they would be encroaching. There would be some major encroachment. That's why it says the LPFM may be causing interference to the station.
Our interference goes inches from the water.
Exactly. So that's the thing.
The riverside.
Keep in mind, this does not take into consideration directional antennas because there's very few LPFMs that are running antennas. So this is all based on this functionality is going to be fixed. It's right now it's based on full facility.
So this says 96.3. That's going to be the station.
That's your that would be your second adjacent.
Oh.
That's your second adjacent. Okay. It'll show your second adjacents on there. So you know it'll show it on there. That doesn't make sense. That doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. And then of course you're going to have the X there for the minimum spacing because under 807 you don't meet minimum spacing because of Canada. But we have a waiver for you
so
that Canada.
Anyway.
So you know again it's, you know we defied all odds on that one. But let's go back to. 2013 AVG. Let's go ahead and enter in here. I just want to see what let's see what happens if we try to move your station. Actually, it's not going to come up because of the Canada being in the way. Now that I think about it, there. But, yeah, it's going to come up all, it's going to come up all blue. Now, of course, the channel's available way off in this area to the northwest, but that's not exactly what you want.
Yeah.
You can also look at towers if you want to move to another tower. You can check, and it will show you all the registered towers that are in the area. That includes your towers that are... that have structure registration numbers as well as all the assets of American Tower and SBA are also preloaded into this tool even if they don't have a registration number. So, you know, this is just a plug for this tool. You know, use it. It's more than just for searching for new channels.
Yeah.
It's a good guide. I use it a lot as my first guidance when I do even professional work. And, you know, I stand by the data. And feel free to use it. And if you have any questions, come see me. I'll be around tomorrow morning. I'll be setting up shop out there, and so we can have some talks about anything you want to talk about. We'll just do. If you want to do some one-on-one time, I'll be out there to do some one-on-one time in the morning.
Amazing, right. As usual.
Yes.
Yeah.
Any questions for Michi on that? Okay, so looking at the clock, we're not going to have any spare time. So let's go directly to Michael and Michi doing settlements and those who don't have that situation.